Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Plagues and Their Aftermath, How Societies Recover from Pandemics, by Brian Michael Jenkins. Read by Will Tulin. Author's Note. My usual field of analysis is political violence and irregular warfare. Therefore, it was not surprising that on a number of occasions during the COVID-19 pandemic, I was asked how COVID-19 might affect terrorism. Would the pandemic suppress terrorist activity, or would it inspire higher levels of political violence? Would it encourage terrorists to employ biological weapons? Would it start wars? Proceeding directly from a pandemic, by definition a phenomenon of global proportions, to terrorism, a particular form of political violence, seems like reversing the sequence often cited in discussions of catastrophe theory. Instead of imagining how the flutter of a butterfly's wings might set off a string of events that escalate to a hurricane, we are attempting to imagine how a hurricane might affect the future flight patterns of butterflies. Clearly, however, pandemics have profound effects on society, creating new political tensions, which in turn may lead to violence. We are already seeing that. In the late summer of 2020, Professor Nicholas Stockhammer at the University of Vienna asked me if I would be willing to write a chapter on the topic of terrorism during and after the pandemic for a book being produced by the European Institute for Counterterrorism and Conflict Prevention. I agreed, and in the following months of shutdowns, social distancing, and no travel, my collection of books on the history of past epidemics grew steadily. I finished my chapter for the book, but I was increasingly fascinated with the subject of plagues in general, including the economic, societal, psychological, and political effects of major outbreaks of disease, and I kept going. The myriad effects of past pandemics provide clues to understanding the possible consequences of the current pandemic. The results related here are still speculative, but I hope are instructive. Today's pandemic will eventually fade. We are not sure how or when that will take place, but the normality we knew before will not return. What the post-pandemic world will look like is far from clear. Uncertainty may be its dominant feature. It is therefore important that we think about, even speculatively, possible shifts in and potential shocks to our economic structures, political landscape, and even mass psychology. Physicians talk about long COVID, the range of ongoing, recurring, or new medical conditions that can appear long after the initial infection. The concept has a broader application to society as a whole. Introduction. And as the story plain doth tell, within the country there did rest a dreadful dragon, fierce and fell, whereby they were full sore oppressed, who by his poisoned breath each day did many of the city slay. The Sherburne Ballads, 1585-1616. Early chroniclers connected plagues with pestilential fumes from fire-breathing dragons. The idea, although fanciful, was not far from medical theory at the time, which attributed outbreaks of disease to miasmas, concentrations of poisonous vapors. Although contagion theory replaced noxious air explanations of infirmity in the 19th century, as late as the mid-1960s, when I was a soldier in the Dominican Republic, farmers showing up at our makeshift medical clinic still blamed chronic aches and other health problems on a bad wind, un viento malo, that had entered their body, usually at night. The focus in this study is not on the causes of epidemics, but on their consequences. Like dragons, epidemics have long, thrashing tails, legacies not only of lives lost, but of devastated economies and social disorder. These, in turn, are likely to have political repercussions. The COVID-19 pandemic will be intensively studied, but it may be years before its effects can be observed and analyzed. Past epidemics, however, offer clues as to what could occur in a future post-pandemic environment. Scholars have produced a rich literature of past outbreaks of disease, ranging from Thucydides' account of the plague that ravaged Athens starting in 430 BCE, to recent accounts of the AIDS and Ebola epidemics. The effects of epidemics are not measured only in mortality. Their secondary consequences, a prominent bacteriologist wrote in 1934, have been much more far-reaching and disorganizing than anything that could have resulted from the mere reduction of the population. Secondary effects include the economic and social disruptions caused by the contagion and efforts to contain it, the effects of widespread fear and public hysteria, increased suspicion and scapegoating, the spread of rumors and conspiracy theories, and political disturbances and disorder that undermine government legitimacy. Modern medicine has been able to reduce the number of deaths and to mitigate, if not eliminate, the sense of helplessness and despair that people must have felt in previous centuries when faced with plagues they could not understand. With advances in science able to reduce mortality, especially as a percentage of the world's population, other kinds of disruptions may now be the primary effects of epidemics. Historical descriptions of the impact of epidemics fall into several broad categories. Traditional historians relating the history of a country or people mention epidemics only when the epidemics clearly alter the trajectory of events, for example, when they result in the loss of a war, contribute to the fall of an empire, or have such dramatic depopulation effects that they change the organization of society. More recent historians look at huge swaths of time and territory to uncover underlying forces that affect the course of events in ways that conventional national histories might miss. As Jared Diamond noted in Guns, Germs, and Steel, because diseases have been the biggest killers of people, they have been decisive shapers of history. Disease has also attracted a set of historians who see epidemics as a distinct category for analysis. As Frank Snowden wrote in Epidemics and Society, "Epidemics have left a particular legacy in their wake. Their singularity merits attention." Historians of epidemics analyze the effects of various contagious diseases throughout history, or document specific outbreaks of disease and their consequences in certain regions, countries, or cities. With its massive death toll, Europe's Black Death of the 14th century has probably attracted the most attention. But books such as Death in Hamburg, Naples in the Time of Cholera, or Russia and the Cholera, 1823 through 1832, cited before, provide detailed accounts of the social and political effects of other epidemics. In this book, we look at the plagues that afflicted the last centuries of the Roman Empire, the Black Death that ravaged Europe in the Middle Ages and returned in waves over the next 400 years, the cholera epidemics that washed back and forth across Europe during the 19th and early 20th centuries, the third pandemic of the bubonic plague in the late 19th century, and the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic that killed between 50 and 100 million people worldwide. Outbreaks of smallpox, typhus, yellow fever, AIDS, Ebola, and other mass killers are also discussed. A dramatis pestilentiae is provided at the end of the book. These historical examples serve as a template for identifying recurring attributes of post-epidemic history. Taking a thematic rather than a chronological or geographical approach, this study catalogs the immediate effects of epidemics and examines the potential longer-term repercussions of today's ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. We begin by comparing the human toll of the COVID-19 pandemic with the mortality of past epidemics. We then compare the responses to previous outbreaks of disease with the immediately observable economic and societal effects of the current pandemic. The discussion next examines the possible political consequences of COVID-19. The longer-term effects are necessarily speculative. Historians still debate the consequences of the Black Death, which began nearly 7 centuries ago. Finally, we explore how past epidemics have affected armed conflict, and whether the COVID-19 pandemic might promote future wars or terrorist campaigns, or encourage the use of biological weapons. A concluding section summarizes the observations. The COVID-19 pandemic is by definition a global event, and this analysis is intended to be global in its scope. The United States admittedly dominates the narrative for several reasons. As we are dealing with a fast-moving topic, a greater volume of information regarding the United States was available to me. It is also true that, according to the latest reported statistics, April 2022, the United States not only leads the world in the total number of reported cases, but accounts for more than 16% of the world's total. With no intention of marginalizing other countries, I have greater familiarity with the social and political situation in the United States. Others will be able to offer more informed comments on the economic, social, and political developments in their countries, making international comparisons possible. This is a preliminary work. As of April 2022, the COVID-19 pandemic is still not contained, making all conclusions tentative. While the virus is declining in some countries, it is surging in many others. Its impact will vary from region to region, country to country, city to city. Mutations of the virus, some more contagious or having greater effect on younger people, have been identified. A fifth wave involving the Omicron variant of the virus spread throughout the world and then subsided, but a further variant reported in March 2022 reversed the downward trend of cases in a number of countries. At the same time, China and Hong Kong, which had managed to quickly suppress the contagion in early 2020 through strict lockdowns, saw a sharp rise in cases. Still more variants will no doubt appear. We are uncertain yet if efforts to slow the spread of the virus combined with vaccination efforts will bring the pandemic to an end, much as the 1918 flu outbreak ended, or if instead the virus will become endemic as waves of new variants wash back and forth across the planet. Are we looking at recovery or at a new and chronic human condition? Chapter 1. The Human Toll. The magnitude of death is a key factor in determining the scale and nature of an epidemic's impact on society. Obviously, it makes a difference whether an epidemic kills 0.5% or 2% of a given population, and whether the outbreak affects an entire continent or a single city. But while the death toll would seem to be the easiest attribute to measure and compare, it turns out to be very difficult to quantify. Accurate counts of the dead are unavailable for outbreaks of disease that occurred centuries ago. Local parish records, where obtainable, are fairly reliable sources for limited localities, but they cannot easily be extrapolated, since even rampant epidemics like the Black Death affected populations unevenly. For national or larger regional totals, we have at best only estimates. The impact of an epidemic also varies according to its duration. High death tolls can reflect rapid depopulation caused by the disease, or an accumulation of deaths over a long period of time. Between the years 1347 and 1351, the first wave of the bubonic plague, or Black Death, killed between 25 and 50 million people in Europe, as much as half of the continent's population. Lesser outbreaks continued. By the mid-17th century, when the plague began to decline, it had killed between 75 and 100 million people. The 1918 flu pandemic killed 50 to 100 million people in 1918 to 1919, including an estimated 675,000 in the United States. The AIDS virus has killed between 26 and 42 million people so far. But fatalities from AIDS have been spread over a period of nearly 40 years since the early 1980s. About 700,000 AIDS deaths have occurred in the United States. Smallpox killed an estimated 300 to 500 million people in the 20th century until 1980, when the United Nations World Health Organization, WHO, officially declared it eradicated. The death toll of pandemics can be expressed not only in numbers, but as a percentage of the total population. Epidemics are measured against local populations, whereas pandemics are often compared with the global population, although they may not affect the entire world, and world population estimates before the early modern era were sketchy. The Antonine Plague, named so because it appeared during the reign of the Roman Emperor Marcus Aurelius Antoninus Augustus, occurred between 165 and 180 BCE. It was brought back from the Middle East by Roman soldiers and spread quickly throughout the Roman Empire, killing an estimated 5 million people. This represented no more than a small percentage of the estimated world population of the time. The Justinian Plague, which occurred during the reign of the Byzantine Emperor Justinian I, began in 541 to 542 CE, but persisted for 200 years and is considered the third worst epidemic in history, eventually killing an estimated 25 to 50 million people, some say 30 to 100 million, possibly 15% or more of the world's population at the time, but a full half of the population of Europe. Assuming the global population to have been somewhere around 375 million in the mid-14th century, the 25 to 50 million deaths caused by the first wave of the Black Death would represent no more than 15% of the world's population, but between a third and two-thirds of Europe's population at the time, perhaps more. An important caveat, however. Both the estimated death tolls and world population figures through the Middle Ages are no more than educated guesses. According to a conservative estimate, the third major plague pandemic, which began in Yunnan Province in China in 1855, reaching Hong Kong in 1894 and from there spreading to India, killed an estimated 15 to 20 million people, less than 2% of the world's population at the time. Local populations, especially in crowded cities where outbreaks occurred, could be gravely affected. Thucydides, in his account of the Peloponnesian War fought between Athens and Sparta in the 5th century BCE, described in detail the devastating effects of the plague that struck Athens. Plague in Florence in the 1340s killed half of the city's population. Only a quarter of Barcelona's population reportedly survived the first year of the Black Death. Many small European towns and villages disappeared altogether. Other towns and villages sealed themselves from outsiders and survived. The intensity of epidemics also varies according to the velocity, duration, and persistence of the disease over time. The record of past epidemics is sobering. We tend to think of epidemics as finite events of relatively short duration, but that has rarely been the case. The Justinian Plague began with an intense outbreak of bubonic plague that lasted from 541 to 549 CE. This was only the first of 15 or more waves that lasted until the year 750 before subsiding. The disease was caused by Yersinia pestis, a bacterium spread by fleas hosted by small mammals, primarily rats, that infested ancient and medieval cities. When the rats died, the fleas jumped to other hosts, including humans. The Y. pestis infection appeared in two forms: bubonic plague, which manifested itself in swollen, black lymph nodes, hence the name Black Death, and pneumonic plague, which moved into the lungs. The first wave of the Black Death, which lasted several years, was sudden and devastating. But the plague was also persistent, and it returned in at least 17 more localized waves over the next three centuries. In 1665, a round of bubonic plague killed more than 100,000 inhabitants of London in 8 months. Cholera washed across the world in 7 successive waves during the 19th and early 20th centuries. In contrast, the 1918 influenza pandemic infected about a third of the world's population in just 2 years, but it then faded as people developed immunity. Years later, however, its viral descendants combined with other flu strains to create the 1957 Asian flu, the 1968 Hong Kong flu, the 1977 Russian flu, and the 2009 swine flu. In addition to the major killers, bubonic and pneumonic plague, smallpox, pandemic influenza, cholera, there are a host of other diseases, including epidemic typhus, yellow fever, and Ebola, which normally have more localized effects. The tolls from these may not rise to the levels seen in the Black Death or even the 1918 flu pandemic, but they can sometimes produce very high death counts. Between 1917 and 1921, typhus, which historically is often associated with wars and troop concentrations, killed as many as 3 million people in Russia. Still more people died of the disease in Eastern Europe and the Balkans during the same period. Typhus, which was also called the Hungarian disease, often accompanied other epidemics, adding to the death toll. During the Thirty Years' War, 1618 to 1648, starvation, plague, and typhus killed an estimated 10 million people, while 350,000 were killed in combat. Typhus was dominant during the first half of the war, and plague deaths dominated the second half. Improved sanitation and modern medicine have reduced the death tolls of the more recent epidemics, but the time required to understand a new disease, then develop, manufacture, and distribute vaccines in sufficient quantities to cover the world's nearly 8 billion people, and to persuade those people to accept the vaccines, gives new viruses a head start. Looking at the currently continuing surges of COVID-19, experts believe that eradicating the virus across the globe is unlikely. New mutations will continue to appear. Containing new outbreaks may be possible, but a more likely scenario is cohabitation. Essentially, that means accepting the virus as a more dangerous version of the ordinary flu. Recurring control measures and annual vaccinations to cover new variants should slow the disease's spread and minimize the death toll. Conceivably, we could see the development of even more effective vaccines that prevent transmission of new variants, or of an efficacious antiviral drug that prevents serious illness. The worst-case scenario would be what scientists have called conflagration, which would see new surges driven by ever more contagious or lethal variants. Even without ascending to the death tolls of history's earlier epidemics, cohabitation with or a conflagration of COVID-19 would have profound effects on the economy, society, and individual behavior. Finally, the impact of mass deaths in any society varies according to how epidemics compare with other causes of death and prevailing life expectancy at the time, which differ according to the economic standing of the victims. Famine, disease, wars, and inadequate medical care limited average life expectancy in Western nations to 30 to 40 years until the 19th century. But class distinctions made a difference. Lords lived far longer than peasants. This is not to say that dramatic increases in mortality had little effect on mindset and behavior in societies where many died young. But contemporary societies may be more sensitive to sudden increases in mortality than earlier societies were. Are today's sensitivities causing people to exaggerate the pandemic? Some might say so, but the numbers suggest that the COVID-19 pandemic is likely to enter the ranks of the great calamities of the modern era. We do not yet know what the final death toll of the COVID-19 pandemic will be. Globally recorded fatalities will surpass 6 million, and according to current projections, could reach 7 million by late summer of 2022. Estimates of excess deaths resulting from the pandemic run above 18 million. There also may be upward revisions as more data become available. The 1918 flu pandemic killed an estimated 50 to 100 million people in 1918 and 1919. The upper figure would make it the worst calamity in recent centuries in terms of total deaths. World War II, 1939 to 1945, remains the deadliest modern event. 6 years of total war resulted in 60 to 85 million deaths. Anywhere between 20 and 50 million people died during the 1959 to 1961 famine in China. It is considered the largest famine in human history. Estimates of the number of total deaths from AIDS run between 26 and 42 million. The United Nations uses 36 million as its estimate. But these deaths occurred over nearly four decades. The 1907 famine in China brought 25 million deaths. Between 20 and 25 million people died in the Second Sino-Japanese War, 1937 to 1945. An estimated 18 to 20 million died in World War I, 1914 to 1918. The Third Plague Pandemic, 1855 to 1902, killed an estimated 15 to 20 million. Between 8 and 12 million people died in the Chinese Civil War, 1927 to 1949. As noted before, more than 6 million COVID-19 deaths have been recorded worldwide, but estimates of excess deaths caused by the pandemic run 2 to 4 times that number. That would give us a potential total death toll of somewhere between 12 and 24 million, putting the COVID-19 pandemic at 7th place on the list of modern calamities. Undeniably, it is already a large-scale human tragedy. The COVID-19 pandemic has resulted in the greatest decline in annual life expectancy in the United States since World War II. The life expectancy of the average American decreased by 1.8 years in 2020. Only the year before, the country had slightly rebounded from a tilt downward caused by the opioid epidemic and a dramatic increase in suicides. In contrast, the 1918 flu pandemic, which resulted in high mortality among younger people, had a much greater effect on life expectancy in the United States, reducing it by approximately 12 years. The effects of COVID-19 on the life expectancy of different sections of American society are unequal. Reporting early in the pandemic indicated that life expectancy for Hispanics declined by 1.8 years, and that of African Americans declined by 2.7 years, versus a decline of 0.8 years for white Americans. This may leave a legacy of resentment in some segments of society that have suffered disproportionately. By February 2022, the racial disparities in cases and death rates had narrowed. Hispanics suffered a larger share of cases relative to their share of the total population, while their share of deaths was close to their share of the population. Blacks suffered a similar share of the cases compared to their share of the population, but slightly more deaths. Whites suffered fewer cases than their share of the population, but a larger share of deaths, principally reflecting the Omicron surge beginning in late 2021. However, when adjusted for age, which is important because the risks of hospitalization and death increase with age, the racial and ethnic disparities remained significant. Blacks, Hispanics, American Indians, and Alaska Natives were about twice as likely to die from COVID-19 as white people. The COVID-19 pandemic thus far appears to be killing fewer people than the great pandemics of history, especially in proportion to the world's growing population. We are fortunate in having recent advances in science and medicine. Without vaccines, modern drugs, intensive care treatment, and respiratory therapy, the world would be back where it was at the time of the 1918 flu pandemic, and the COVID-19 death toll would be much higher. We can get a rough idea of how much higher by looking at the example of Peru, where the virus overwhelmed the country's weak healthcare system. As of April 2022, Peru had recorded more than 3.5 million cases of COVID-19, which resulted in 212,486 deaths. Fatalities occurred in just under 6% of the cases. Extrapolating that ratio to the approximately 500 million cases recorded worldwide would result in a global death toll of nearly 30 million instead of 6 million, although again, COVID-19 deaths are probably undercounted. This is roughly 60% of the 1918 flu's lower estimated death toll, which was about 50 million. However, the world's population was much smaller in the early 1900s, so the percentage of fatalities caused by the 1918
sample complete. Ready to continue?